All right, so picture this. You're just reading a book, relaxing, right? And suddenly you realize, wait a minute, this is all plagiarized.
Happens more than you think.
Okay, but let's say you do the right thing. You contact the original publisher, wanted to help out, and they end up suing and winning a huge settlement. But you get nothing.
Ouch.
Yeah, ouch is right. Sounds pretty unfair.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's exactly what went down in a 1981 case, Martin v. Little, Brown and Co.
Martin v. Little Brown and Co. Okay. And why should lawyers or anyone really care about a case from what, over 40 years ago?
Because it highlights some really important points about implied contracts, those agreements that aren't written down, and the sometimes tricky issue of volunteering your services.
Volunteering, huh? Okay, so what exactly happened in this case? Give us the rundown.
So we have our main character, James Martin, and he's reading a book on financial planning when he spots all this plagiarized material.
So far, so good. He's just an average guy reading a book.
Right. So Martin, he decides to contact Bantam Books because he thinks they're the original publishers.
Like this.
But plot twist, Bantam Books, they weren't even involved.
Oh, wow. So then what?
So Little, Brown and Co., the actual publisher of the original work, they hear about all this and they contact Martin directly. They're like, "Hey, we need your evidence." And Martin, he's a helpful guy. He hands it all over.
And then what? They give him a big reward.
Not exactly. Radio silence, crickets. At least until Little, Brown and Co. files a copyright infringement lawsuit, uses Martin's evidence, and wins a huge settlement.
Wait, hold on. So they take his evidence, win millions, and he gets nothing.
Yep. You got it. And Martin's like, "Hold up, where's my cut?"
I mean, I'd be pretty upset too. Didn't he have any legal grounds to stand on?
He thought so. He actually sued, claiming there was like an implied contract, but the court didn't agree.
Okay, so let's break this down. Implied contract. What does that even mean in, normal people speak?
It's basically an agreement that's created by actions and conduct, not a formal written document. Actions speak louder than words kind of thing.
Okay, so Martin's thinking, hey, they took my evidence, used it, they obviously owe me something.
Right. His argument was that by accepting and using his evidence, Little, Brown and Co. implicitly agreed to compensate him.
Sounds reasonable on the surface, but the court didn't see it that way.
Nope, they didn't. The court really honed in on the specifics of those actions and whether there was clear mutual intent to pay.
So like a meeting of the minds kind of thing.
Exactly. They looked at the letters between Martin and Little, Brown and Co., and they just didn't see any real negotiation or any discussion about payment terms. Plus, Martin initially reached out to Bantam, a third party, right? He never even mentioned money, just offered his help.
So basically, the court saw him as just a helpful bystander, not someone looking to strike a deal.
Yeah, pretty much. And there's this other little detail that adds another layer to the story.
Okay, I'm listening.
Little, Brown and Co., they did actually send Martin a check for $200, called it an honorarium, but guess what? He never cashed it.
$200. That's it. They won millions. You'd think they could at least share a little bit more, right?
You'd think so, but the court saw that uncashed check as, well, a bit of a mixed message. To them, it kind of reinforced the idea that there wasn't a clear agreement about payment.
Wow. So even that small detail played a role in the court's decision.
You bet. It all comes back to showing a clear, consistent intent,
Okay, but I gotta ask, even if there wasn't a formal agreement, Little Brown and Co. definitely benefited from Martin's tip, right? Like they wouldn't have won that lawsuit without him. Is there any way someone in his position could get some kind of compensation?
Well, there's this legal concept called quantum merudit. Basically, it means what one has earned.
Quantum merut, fancy legal Latin. So what does that mean in plain English?
It's a way for someone to claim compensation for their services, even if there wasn't a written contract.
Ah, so that could apply here, right? Martin provided a valuable service that directly led to a big win for Little Brown and Co.
Sure, it sounds like it could, but here's the thing with quantum merit. It all hinges on proving something called unjust enrichment.
Unjust enrichment. Okay, another legal term. Break it down for me.
Basically, you have to show that the party who benefited acted in a way that was, well, unfair or maybe even unethical. So in this case,
The court decided that Little Brown and Co. didn't act unethically.
right. They didn't go out looking for Martin's help. They just responded to his initial contact. And remember, he presented himself as a volunteer.
So volunteering, while a good thing in general, can really backfire if you later change your mind about getting paid.
Exactly. Judge Wieand, he even wrote in the opinion, quote, "Volunteers have no right to restitution."
Ouch, that's got to sting, especially for anyone who's ever felt taken advantage of after offering help.
It does make you think, doesn't it? But beyond the ouch factor, this case really highlights something that's important for lawyers and really anyone who collaborates to understand.
Okay, so let's get to the heart of it. What are the big takeaways here? What can we all learn from Martin's experience?
Well, we'll definitely get into that. But first, we need to dig a little deeper into Judge Wien's opinion.
Okay, sounds good. Let's unpack that right after this.
So Judge Wien, in his ruling, he said some pretty interesting things. Like one quote that really stands out, it's a promise to pay for services can only be implied when they are rendered in such circumstances as authorize the party performing to entertain a reasonable expectation of their payment.
Okay, whoa, that's a mouthful. Can we translate that from legalese into, like, plain English?
Sure, sure. Basically, what he's saying is you can't just go around doing something helpful and then automatically assume you're going to get paid for it.
Right.
There needs to be a good reason based on the whole situation for you to expect to be compensated.
So, like, in Martin's case, the court was saying the circumstances around his actions just didn't support a reasonable expectation of payment.
Exactly. I mean, remember, he first reached out to Bantam, not even the right publisher, and he never even brought up money, right? He just offered up this evidence, totally volunteered it, and honestly, that really hurt his case.
It does sound like he was acting out of genuine concern, like he wanted to see the right thing done, not necessarily looking for a payday.
Yeah, and that's the impression he gave, for sure. But I bet you're thinking, hold on, but Little Brown & Co. still made a ton of money off his information, so shouldn't they have paid him something?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. It's like they clearly benefited from his actions.
And that's a totally valid point. But what the court kept emphasizing was that Little Brown & Co. didn't actually ask Martin for his help. They never promised him anything. They simply responded to, you know, his initial contact.
So no matter how much they profited, they weren't legally obligated to pay him because there was no agreement up front, and he was, for all intents and purposes, acting as a volunteer.
Exactly. In this case, it's a really good reminder. The law often treats actions taken with a clear expectation of payment very differently from those done purely out of, you know, good intentions, like volunteering.
Got it. Okay, so putting on my non-lawyer hat for a minute, what does all this mean for the average person? Like, we all work together in different ways, right? Not all of us are drafting contracts left and right.
That's a great point, and I think what this case really drives home is the importance of crystal clear communication. Anytime you're exchanging services or information, don't leave anything to chance. If you expect to be paid, say so up front.
So even if I'm just, like, brainstorming with a colleague on a project, it's smart to shoot off a quick email just outlining everyone's expectations.
Yeah, exactly. It might feel a little awkward, but a simple email that says something like, hey, just so we're all on the same page, I'm expecting to be compensated for my time on this, can prevent a whole lot of headaches later on.
That's really great advice for freelancers, consultants, even someone just helping a friend with a business idea. Put it in writing.
Couldn't agree more. And, you know, looking at it from the other side, if you're the one receiving unsolicited help, you got to be super careful not to imply there's any payment involved, unless you really intend to pay. Document every interaction clearly.
So, like, if someone emails me with a helpful tip, I should respond with something like, thanks for the info, but just to be clear, I'm not able to offer any payment for this.
Perfect. Cover yourself. Because even those casual back and forths, they can have legal consequences, you know?
Yeah.
This case is proof.
This case really does make you think. It's like, how do we encourage people to do the right thing, like reporting plagiarism, without, you know, scaring them off with stories like Martin's?
It's a tough question. We want to promote ethical behavior, but we also need to make sure people aren't taking advantage. I think clear communication is really the key.
You said that a few times now, and it's really sinking in. Clarity, clarity, clarity.
It's everything.
All right, so switching gears a little bit, there's another piece of this case that we need to dive into. Judge Wien made a pretty bold statement about volunteers, he said. Volunteers have no right to restitution.
Yeah, we touched on that earlier, and it does seem kind of harsh, doesn't it?
It can sound that way, yeah, especially at first glance. But let's dig into what this means in the legal world and why it's so important.
Okay, I'm listening. Explain why this no right to restitution concept is so important for understanding this case and, honestly, life in general.
Well, the basic idea is this. When you freely offer your time and services without any expectation of getting paid, you give up certain legal rights.
So in Martin's situation, by calling himself a volunteer, he basically gave up any claim to compensation.
Exactly. And this isn't just about lawsuits either. It applies to everyday stuff too. Think about like volunteering at a charity or helping a friend move. You're not doing those things expecting a paycheck.
Right. It's about genuine goodwill, helping out without any strings attached. Exactly. Now, that doesn't mean you can never get paid for volunteer work, but it does mean you can't legally demand it after the fact, especially if there was no agreement beforehand.
So whether it's a formal contract or just doing a favor for a friend, being upfront about your intentions is absolutely crucial.
100%. Now, remember that $200 honorarium check that Martin got but never actually cashed?
Oh, yeah, that still bugs me. What if he had cashed it? Would that have changed the outcome?
The million-dollar question. That's a really intriguing what-if scenario. And you know what? Let's explore that right after this.
Yeah, that $200 check, it really makes you think, huh. It's like this weird gray area between, like, a gift and a legal obligation.
Totally. So let's play that what-if game. What if Martin had cashed the check? Could that have changed the court's decision?
It's definitely possible. You see, cashing that check, the court might have seen that as him accepting payment.
Ah, I see.
Which then implies some kind of agreement, you know, even though nothing was ever written down or officially said. But wouldn't Little Brown & Co. just argue that the $200 was like a thank you, a nice gesture, not them admitting they owed him anything?
Oh, for sure they could argue that. And that's what makes it so tricky. The court would have to try and figure out the real intention behind that payment and the context of, like, everything that happened.
So they'd be looking at the letters, anything he said about payment before, how Martin was involved in the whole thing, the whole nine yards.
Exactly. It would be a real legal battle with both sides trying to convince the court of their interpretation of that $200 check.
Wow. So it's a big what if with no easy answer. It really shows how these little actions can have big legal consequences.
It does, doesn't it? And it highlights why it's always a good idea to get legal advice if you're ever in a similar situation. A good lawyer can help you navigate all those complexities, you know?
Solid advice. Well, this has been a fascinating deep dive into Martin v. Little Brown & Co. We've learned about implied contracts, quantum erruit, the risks of volunteering, and how crucial clear communication is.
Absolutely. It's a classic case that shows how even a good deed can land you in hot water. Legally speaking. The law can be full of surprises, that's for sure.
And for everyone listening, remember, if you ever find yourself in a legal what-if situation, don't hesitate to get some professional guidance. It's always better to be safe than sorry.
Couldn't agree more. This case, it's a cautionary tale for anyone who might be providing information or services that could be valuable down the line. Always clarify expectations and protect yourself. It might seem like an extra step, but as we've seen with Martin v. Little, Brown & Co., neglecting those precautions can lead to some unexpected and maybe even disappointing results.
Well said. And on that note, we're going to wrap up this deep dive. Thanks for joining us as we explore this fascinating legal battle. Until next time, stay informed and stay curious.